Hello, and welcome to my podcast, Sounding the Alarm. Be safe, be vigilant, be prepared. Today's topic is the role of the EMT in an active shooter response. Our guest speaker today is David Williams. R. David Williams is a lifelong resident of the city of East Orange and became an employee of its health department in 1983, working with the East Orange City Emergency Medical Service. He began working with the University Hospital's Emergency Medical Service in Newark, New Jersey, where he served as an emergency medical technician, heavy rescue technician, EMS dispatcher, and member of the Special Operations Group. He served there from 1985 until 2004. He joined the East Orange Fire Department as a dispatcher in 1987. He presently serves as Fire Department's Chief Public Safety Telecommunicator, Deputy Coordinator of the Office of Emergency Management, and Deputy Fire Coordinator with the Essex County Office of Emergency Management. He has been involved in emergency management since 2003, where he formed the East Orange Community Emergency Response Team, also known as CERT. He continues to respond to emergencies throughout Essex County and provides assistance to residents displaced by fire. He conducts regular first aid, CPR, and emergency preparedness training programs for both first responders and the community. So, David, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm very proud to be a member of the public safety community and have been an EMT for these years. I look forward to the program tonight.
Great, good. So we're going to get started. Was there anything else that you wanted to add? Tell us a little bit extra about yourself.
Yes, we're very proud to have an active community emergency response team in East Orange, and I work with them on a regular basis, providing training and outreach.
Okay, that's good. Very good. Okay, so let's begin with you telling us exactly what an EMT is and what kind of training they undergo.
Oh, EMT stands for Emergency Medical Technician. In New Jersey, the EMT training is the equivalent of a 6-credit college course, and the training is a minimum. The initial training is a minimum of 190 hours. The training includes classroom, lectures, hands-on, and skill sessions, and even clinical time at the hospital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of hours. So is it equivalent to what, not what a doctor or someone would go through, or a nurse or something similar to that?
It's not as long as a doctor, but it is. It can be more than almost two semesters. And then after the initial training, the EMT has to continually recertify and take continuing education classes to keep their certification active.
Okay, well, that's good to know. So, to your knowledge, is the training that the New Jersey EMTs receive, is that specific to New Jersey, or is this a national standard of training that all EMTs must undergo?
The standard is very similar to all of the states. Most of the EMTs will receive their initial certification at a state level. Once that's done, they can then go on to become nationally registered. But the standard curriculum is very similar to all 50 states.
Okay. And so can you tell us a couple of the, courses or things that they learn specifically?
The program is very, very intense, bleeding control, medical emergencies, trauma care, obviously CPR, splinting.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite intense.
Right. Okay. And so this isn't something that a regular person would be able to receive training for. I mean, we would receive training for CPR, Control the Bleed. I know that that's a website that does the, they train you on how to stop or control bleeding in a trauma situation, but they just, it's very basic. I don't think it's the same as what an EMT would go through. So are you familiar with that, with the Control the Bleed website?
Yes. Yes, the Bleeding Control the Bleed, is a very good site to reference. In fact, we host several bleeding control programs in East Orange, where we are training lay people to essentially control severe bleeding during time of an emergency. That's that's about a two-hour program, much less intense than an EMT program, but it does teach people how to help in time of a crisis.
Right. Okay, that's good. That's good to know. Okay, so are EMTs required to specifically complete an active shooter response training, or does their regular training and certifications prepare them for that type of event?
Active shooter training is a very important topic now. The protocols are constantly changing. We learn something every time a situation happens. While bleeding control and triage are included in the EMT curriculum, specific active shooter training is not. That's relatively new.
Okay. So it's not something that New Jersey EMTs receive at this point in time?
Correct. Most EMTs are not going to have an active shooter training program. That's in addition to your basic EMT program, and that's typically run in conjunction with law enforcement and your local emergency management.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. Thank you so much for sharing that, David. I appreciate it. We need to take a brief pause for a commercial break, but please stay tuned as we have more valuable information from our guest speaker, David Williams. Hello, I'm Leon Koy-Chivet, publisher, corporate trainer, speaker, and author of We Made Plans, a fictional novel which debuted as number 3 on Amazon's hot new releases. This amazing story chronicles the lives of a group of longtime friends who were in the midst of living their best lives when they experienced a devastating, trajectory-altering event, hashtag the event. If you want to purchase my book, and you will, it can be found on Amazon.com and my website at www.leonquechevette.com. That's L-A-O-N-Q-U-E. C-H-A-V-E, T as in Tom, T-E, LeonQuayChevette.com. Thank you for your support. We are back with our guest speaker, David Williams of the Essex County Office of Emergency Management. Thank you again for joining us, David.
Well, thank you, LeonQuay.
Okay, so we're going to continue with our review of the role of an EMT in an active shooter response. So let's go to our next question, which is, what is the standard now for when an EMT can safely enter an active shooter situation to start to save victims?
Yeah, that's a very important topic. Traditionally, the EMTs, the emergency medical technicians, would have to wait in the safe zone. We would call it the coal zone until law enforcement, the police, makes the scene safe. Things are changing now, and now we're seeing many EMS agencies and even some fire departments forming what's being called a rescue task force. A rescue task force is where we're meeting EMS and fire rescue people with law enforcement so that the EMS and the fire rescue can go into the warm zone to get closer to the patients and start rendering care before the whole scene is secured. So as soon as law enforcement clears an area, we're trying to get EMS and the fire rescue in to start triaging and saving lives before the whole scene is contained. And that's a relatively new program, and we're doing a lot of training and equipment purchases every day now to make that happen.
Well, that's comforting for, you know, someone who, you know, I always say God forbid, but for someone who may be involved in an active shooter event like that, to know that changes have been made to get to the victims quicker so that you don't have the situation of necessarily passing away because of, you know, the uncontrolled bleeding or whatever the situation is. So that's good to know. The next question I have for you is, how do they determine who should be worked on first? Is it first seen, first served in that area that's been cleared, or do they triage it differently?
Well, triage is part of the basic EMT curriculum. And it's even emphasized in our active shooter response plans. So we definitely want to triage patients, doing the most good for the most people, you know, stopping severe bleeding first. So we definitely want to get see as many people as we can to, again, save as many lives as possible. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do that through triage.
Okay. So if I'm injured in an active shooter event and I have a superficial wound, am I going to be tended to, or are you going to skip over me to go to someone who has a real gunshot wound?
In the triage, we're typically going to take care of people with more serious life-threatening wounds and illnesses first before we address superficial wounds and patients who can walk. So we're definitely mm-hmm. going providing care for the more seriously injured
okay.
people.
Okay. Okay. And I would think that would be comforting for someone who's seriously injured, and whoever can get up and walk and get out of there should do it anyway. But that's good to know in general. And this is something that all EMTs would be trained to do, to handle the most serious ones first?
Yes, triage is a basic EMT skill that everybody learns, and we're carrying triage tags and other items to help speed up the process.
Okay. See, I didn't watch all of those hospital shows like Grey's Anatomy and things like that, so I don't know. I don't know what the process is exactly, but I do appreciate you sharing that with us. In general, are there do's and don'ts that the public should be made aware of when it comes to the arrival of EMTs?
Well, but for an active shooter event, we're probably going to see law enforcement arrive before the EMTs. We definitely encourage people to listen to those first instructions, whether it's EMS or, again, law enforcement is getting there to make the scene safe. We want to encourage people to follow those first instructions. If you are right mm-hmm. there next to someone who has severe bleeding, we're definitely encouraging first aid and encouraging people to help stop the bleed.
Okay. So that really leads to my next question. What can an untrained, regular, everyday citizen do to help a gunshot victim while waiting for the EMTs to come through to assist? And you're saying that you recommend that person, if they can, try to control the bleed, right?
Absolutely. We encourage people in an active shooter situation to make sure the scene is safe. Secure their location. If you can call for help from a safe location, call for help, but do not give away your position during an active shooter event to call. If you're mm-hmm. in the vicinity of someone who is severely injured, direct pressure and applying a tourniquet are the best ways to stop severe bleeding. And we also want to try to keep the person warm. That's the basic mm-hmm. Shock treatment.
Oh, well, why do you say that? To keep them warm?
Keeping a patient warm helps limit shock setting in.
Okay. Okay, so say something happens in a workplace. Some of us, because we're always cold, like particularly me, I'm always cold at work, and I do have an extra jacket at my chair at work. And some people do, you know, have those things available to them, but it's not likely in that situation where we would have blankets or something. So it's okay to take a jacket or something and try to keep that person warm.
Yes, definitely try to keep the person warm, applying another jacket over them. But we're seeing a lot of businesses, a lot of agencies putting bleeding control kits, putting first aid kits, putting blankets out in public places to help make their situation, improve their situation in a time of crisis.
Okay. So I know that my office has a bleeding control kit available. I'm not sure if it's on every floor, but I know that we do have it. but I don't know exactly what's in it. So I don't know if there's a blanket in it or not, but I know that some of the other stuff is in there. If you are a regular everyday citizen and you need to help someone out, you say apply pressure. So are we supposed to just use our bare hands to apply pressure? Are we using another jacket? I mean, how exactly are we supposed to help apply pressure to help somebody survive?
Yeah, if you have the first aid kit there, we would get bandages out of the first aid kit. In the absence of a first aid kit, a clean cloth, or yes, even a bare hands against a wound could help to apply pressure, could help control bleeding and possibly save the person's life.
Okay. Okay, well, that's good to know. I guess in an emergency situation, you have to do what you have to do. So whatever that is, if you have, I guess if you have something that you could use to separate your hands from that person, but still apply pressure, that would be better. But if not, to just go ahead and use your bare hands to try to save their life, right?
Yes. If there's something there, a plastic bag in the absence of gloves, a plastic bag could be used as a barrier, or simply just heavy cloth against the wound.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good information because you really never know what you may have around you. You might not be in a position where you can get to that first aid kit or the bleeding control kit, and time may be of the essence. So you have to use what you can to try to help that person out. So that's great. Thank you so much, David. We need to take another break, but please stay tuned as we have more valuable information from our guest speaker, Dave Williams of East Orange, New Jersey, with the Essex County Office of Emergency Management. Stay tuned, guys.
Hi, my name is Dr. Mildred Charles, and I'm the new host of the Career and College Matters podcast, which airs on Mondays at 6 p.m. If you're a parent with a high school student or a young adult child who needs help answering the questions what now and what next when it comes to their college and career goals, then you don't want to miss the Career and College Matters podcast. If your child needs help figuring out how to get to the next level of life and find the right pathway to success, then you don't want to miss the Career and College Matters podcast. Don't forget to tune in every Monday at 6 p.m.
Okay, so we are back with our guest speaker, David Williams of the Essex County Office of Emergency Management. He is also a lifelong resident of the city of East Orange, New Jersey. And for those who have read my book, that city's name should ring a bell. So again, thank you, David, for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Right. Thank you again. Very excited to be here.
Good, good, good. Okay. So one of the questions we wanted to start off with, because of the conversation we've just had, we just want to follow up and find out how can you identify when someone is going into shock?
Typically, the first signs of shock could be a cool and clammy skin or a rapid change in skin color. Also, a rapid pulse and rapid breathing are typically the first couple of signs of a person going into shock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your body enters shock when you don't have enough blood circulating through the system to keep your organs and tissues following properly. And those are the things that the body is going to try to do to help compensate for it.
Oh, okay. Okay. And so offline, you mentioned that you just recently had an experience with that at a certain location, which you don't have to reveal the exact location, but can you share with our listeners what happened with that?
Yeah, one of our community partners was at church. And she noticed a person experiencing a rapid change in skin color, and the person became unconscious, stopped breathing. Fortunately, the person has had emergency training and immediately started CPR and brought the person back. So we had a local success story.
Right. That's great. And so you're familiar with that person. Is that person a nurse or is that person an EMT?
That was a nurse who provided the service that day.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank God for that it ended up the way it did. And so I just want to make sure for our listeners, because I know we have some variety, but in recognizing the difference in color, that's something that that is visible whether you are a person of color or Caucasian or whatever, correct?
Yes, it's typically the rapid change of skin color. A person could become ashen or pale, and you can notice that in whatever, whether the person is light or dark, or you can definitely notice that at all times if the person has that rapid change in skin color.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, that's good to know. And this is really good information. I think it's great information for me. So I know it's got to be great information for our listeners. So thanks. So our next question is regarding my book, We Made Plans. And one of the characters sat in on a class about controlling the bleed. And we've talked a lot about bleed control and controlling the bleed. But the character could not remember the specific details regarding how to apply a tourniquet. What advice would you give to our listeners on how to handle themselves in a life or death situation? And what were your thoughts on how the EMTs were represented in the book?
I think the EMTs were represented very accurately. The book was very enlightening.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm glad I had the opportunity to read it.
Good.
Again, the tourniquet is used to help control severe bleeding to an arm or a leg. The tourniquet is applied tight. It's supposed to go between the wound and the heart, and there's a mechanism to tighten the tourniquet and lock it in place. And once it's in place, we don't remove it until the person gets to medical care. And it's essential that we don't cover the tourniquet, because the medics, the EMTs, the doctors all need to know that that person has a tourniquet. So those are the three basics of use of a tourniquet. Apply it tight, don't remove it, and don't cover it.
Okay. So what I've heard is that if you can mark the time that you put the tourniquet on, that you should. In your opinion, does that make a difference?
Yes. Whenever possible, we want to write the time of the tourniquet on the tourniquet so the medical providers can see how long that tourniquet has been on the patient. But it's important that we don't cover it so that they can see it and we don't remove it.
Okay. Okay, so I actually received a tourniquet from a friend, a coworker friend who is an EMT, but he ordered this offline. So I happen to have, but for most people, they don't have an actual tourniquet on them. So what else can we use to serve as a tourniquet?
In your first aid kit, quite often there's a triangular bandage. That can be used to make a tourniquet using the triangular bandage, tying a square knot, and then perhaps using a stick to tighten it. We can use that to make a tourniquet. There's quite a few things around the home that can be used, or the office that can be used to make a tourniquet. It's very important that if we're trying to make a tourniquet out of a household or office products, that we use something wide, perhaps a scarf. A wide scarf, a thick scarf would make a good tourniquet. We want to avoid belts and extension cords and wires, because they could often harm the person and don't make good tourniquets.
Really? Now, I thought belts did make good tourniquets. I'm really surprised by that. Because I thought that was something that you could use to make it tight enough.
Belts are very hard to properly position and lock in place. Most belts don't have holes all the way around them, for example.
Right. Right. A smaller, you mean to do an arm that might be smaller?
To do an arm, to do an arm or even a leg, you may mm-hmm. not have enough holes in the proper position to properly lock it in place.
Mm-hmm.
Or if the belt is too thick, it could be too thick to tie in place. So belts are typically not the best thing for a tourniquet, and any kind of wire or thin rope or string could damage the cause harm, and again would not be a good tourniquet. So we want to use something wide, like a scarf.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's definitely good information. I was, I guess, misinformed from watching too many movies or something, but I could have sworn that belts would have been a good option. But I do know that I see many people at work wearing scarves, and not just the scarves that you wear outside, but, you know, designer type scarves. And so something like that, I guess, would be, like you said, good to have and good to use if you needed to. And I know for a fact that people leave scarves all over their locations in the office. So I'm just thinking for myself in terms of where I spend most of my time, what I would be able to find if I needed it. So yeah, that's good to think about. Okay, so is there anything else you want our listeners to know in order to be safe, be vigilant, and be prepared?
Yes, be safe, be vigilant, be prepared, and be involved. We want people to be involved in their community, to take your first aid classes, to take bleeding control, as well as the FEMA You Are the Help Until Help Arrive classes. How do we learn about those programs? How do we participate? You reach out to your local Office of Emergency Management and ask about public safety and first aid training in your community. A lot of towns mm-hmm. do that. We offer quite a few programs in East Orange throughout the year. In fact, we're opening a program next week, a community active shooter program we're hosting next week that's open to the public. And then mm-hmm. We also encourage people to join their local community emergency response team, their CERT team, or the fire volunteers or police auxiliary. These are all ways to learn about public safety, to help protect yourself, your community, and these are all nationwide programs.
Okay, well, that's good information to know. I really appreciate that you gave so many different options for people to consider in order to figure out how to be involved, like you said, and to be able to save lives. So that's good. And they can also, I believe, contact or go to the Department of Health website. Office of Emergency Management or the statewide Office of Emergency Management also has information on that website. And if I can figure it out real quick, I will give the exact website. But I also think it's good that East Orange is doing what they're doing. And this is something that I'm pretty sure is not just, you know, relevant or prevalent in the city of East Orange. I'm pretty sure most areas are trying to do something like that or get something like this into place so that everyone can get trained on the additional things that they need to do. I know that when my kids were younger, we used to do stuff through our YMCA, and I took CPR courses through the YMCA. And it was great because actually it was when, my daughter was a baby. So it was great to take the CPR course then. And since then, I've taken a couple to recertify. I don't think I'm up to date now, and I probably should. I should probably preach do what I'm preaching about. But if you haven't, there are various ways to get involved and to make sure that you're trained as much as possible. So, David, can you tell us how people can get in contact with you?
Well, you can contact me. My direct landline is 973-677-8924. That rings right to my desk in emergency management in East Orange. Or my email, and I'm at david.williams@eastorange-nj.gov.
Okay, great. That's very good. Thank you so much. You've provided our listeners with some great insights, some great information, some great options. And again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join me. You have no idea how much I really appreciate this. So thank you, David.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
Yes, good. Okay, so to all of our listeners, I hope you found this information valuable. It's imperative to know what to do in situations like this. And it's important to know how to try to save someone's life. It's not enough to hold them and rock them and cry like we see in the movies. So make sure you do your part and take those courses, learn how to control the bleed, how to use a tourniquet, what to use as a tourniquet, which we learned or at least I learned from David today, how to perform CPR. So we need you to make sure that you're vigilant with that, because what you do could very well make the difference in life or death situations. Remember, my debut novel, We Made Plans, is available on Amazon.com and my website, which is www.leonquechavette.com. That's LeonquechaVette.com. Most importantly, we make plans every day, and to see those plans through, we all, with regard to our personal safety, need to be safe, be vigilant, and be prepared, and be blessed. Love you all, and thank you.